The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, this is Brian Tatler from Diamond Head, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and anything else we feel like. We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids. It's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. What an honor on this episode. A guy I've been trying to get for a long time. Brian Tatler from Diamond Head is here. And
Wow. Amazing to talk with this guy. And before we get into that interview, I want to say that we just heard the song It's Electric off of Lightning to the Nations by Diamond Head from 1980. Emily is hanging out with me here. Emily, how are you?
I'm good, but I'm having a hard time. The Oscars are on tonight, and we're taping this during the Oscars.
Well, you know
I'm a big fan,
right,
of the Oscars.
I do know that, and we hadn't had you on an episode in a while, and people were getting a little upset that you haven't been on the show, so I'm going to leave you to the Oscars in a minute, but I did want to sneak up here into the bedroom where you and Pearl are camped
sneaking.
Out on the bed watching the Oscars, and... Yeah, so we go to a lot of shows. I feel like we've gotten a lot of tickets lately. We have Ministry.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
We have potentially Sammy Hagar and Whitesnake and Night Ranger. We have Def Leppard, Motley Crue. And
we have Ozzy. Let's talk Ozzy for a second.
Ozzy,
can
we?
We
have Overkill.
Because Mark and I were, Overkill. Don't just breeze over that one, because that's always one of my favorite shows. Overkill. Love them so much. Bobby Blitz is everything. But let's talk about Ozzy. What does everyone think? I mean, okay, I'll be honest. I think the Parkinson's has been there for years. And I think I've said that to you for a while. And I think it may have been diagnosed a while ago. And it's his own business. It's no one else's business. But I think the diagnosis only came out recently. And... some of that was business, I believe. You know, some of, like, that was Sharon saying, I don't want to share this information too early.
Right.
Do you think he's going to make our show?
I don't know, because they asked him that when he was on the red carpet at the Grammys, and he didn't give, like, a definitive yes. You know, he was like, oh, we'll kind of see how I'm feeling type of thing. And listen, it's obvious that he's got a cane. That, you know, June isn't really that far away. I mean, I don't know
it's
what we should expect.
It's a progressive kind of disease.
Yeah.
Let's talk about other people in the rock scene who have had Parkinson's. Yeah. Judas Priest.
Right. Glenn Tipton.
Right.
Michael J. Fox.
It can happen, that kind of downhill slope in their physical abilities can happen very quickly. And it's very much out of their hands. So it's heartbreaking to me from one perspective. I just want the best for him. I don't give a shit. I've seen Ozzy. How many times have I seen Ozzy? 12 times?
I don't
13
know. A lot.
Times?
Yeah.
I mean, I go to support him because I love him. Do I need to see another show? Is it going to be something different? Probably not. Although I love the new stuff. I love the new material. And we've talked about how would they deliver it. Some of the new material is very...
Right. I don't think they're going to play any new material. That's just my thing. That's a band that is different from the live band. And let's face it, if we just get him doing the old material, I think we're going to be lucky. We could potentially get one song, maybe Under the Graveyard or something, but I kind of don't know. And I think that this will be my prediction is... knowing that they've come out and said that he has this Parkinson's and that, you know, he's out there with the cane, and now we know why he was sitting down during the Post Malone performance at the American Music Awards, and even in the video for what's that one video? I don't know. That one video that he came out with recently, music video, he's sitting in that.
Like on
too.
A park bench or whatever.
Yeah. So it's like... Yeah, I think this if he does tour, this will, in my opinion, be probably the last time we all get to see him. So let's wait and see if it happens, you know?
Yeah, I don't even care. I just want him to feel good, and I'm heartbroken if he doesn't.
Right.
Right? Because his fans we are eternally on his side. None of us. Give me an example of one Aussie fan who's going to bitch.
They do.
You know what? Well, screw them.
They're
not real Aussie fans.
I
they
read
don't
this
love
stuff
him
on
then.
Social
Guess
media.
What?
And, yeah.
You know what? Screw them.
Go
you
to the Talking
you're not
Metal
an
YouTube
fan.
Page. They're already like, I put up a video where I was talking about you know, we don't, basically what you're saying, we don't care if he gets up there with a cane, it's okay. And people were bitching and moaning about,
you know,
that.
What?
Yeah.
If you care about your own, you know, getting off on watching Ozzy Osbourne on stage more than his health and happiness as a human being, you don't love Ozzy. You
right.
don't. You're not a real Ozzy fan.
Right.
So you know what? Let's think about Ozzy before you're, oh, I need a night out to see Ozzy play again. No, you
right.
don't. Just pray for him and his family and let him be well and healthy.
Right.
And, you know, he's not going to ever be healthy again because, honestly, it's a disease that kind of gets worse over time. I just pray for his comfort, right? I don't want him to be uncomfortable, and the thought of him being uncomfortable is bad to me.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%, Emily. And we shall see. June 22nd is when the rescheduled Ozzy Osbourne date is to take place at Madison Square Garden. And Emily, we have third row, so
you know what?
You know,
but if it happens, see. Yes.
Yeah, we will see.
If it doesn't happen, God bless him. I love him so much.
Absolutely.
And his family.
Absolutely. And let's keep this great Diamond Head music going. This is Call Me off of the Borrowed Time record. I believe Borrowed Time was like 82, I want to say. Great stuff. Again, Diamond Head here on Talking Metal. Stay tuned for the interview with Brian from Diamond Head.
4 o'clock in the morning now, and I can't sleep for love. Been waiting for you to call. Say you love me enough.
Call Me by Diamond Head.
Right on. And we're going to get into this interview with Brian from Diamond Head, a guy I've wanted on the show for a long time, Brian Tatler. And big thanks to Patrick for really lighting a fire under my ass to get this interview secured and take place. I'm sorry, Patrick is a patron. Patrick the patron. And again, thanks, man, because if it weren't for you, who knows if we would have gotten Brian, because I feel like I owe it to the people on Patreon to make their wishes come true. And listen, I know you wanted this interview. I wanted this interview, Patrick, and here we go. Brian from Diamond Head, finally on the podcast, a living legend, guys. This is Diamond Head from 2019 with The Messenger. And after that, we will hear my interview with Brian from Diamond Head. Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and I am truly honored to have on the line with us a legend, Brian Tatler from Diamond Head. Brian, how are you?
I'm all right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for saying that. It's nice to speak to you.
Yeah, I've been a longtime fan going way, way back, and I definitely want to talk to you about your just incredible history. But let's talk about more recent times right now, because less than a year ago, Diamond had delivered a really great record, The Coffin Train, and I have to tell you, I really like the diversity of the record, because when I first listened to it a number of months back at this point, you know, Belly of the Beast kicks it off, and to me, that's got that real Diamond Head spirit. It's and I know the self-titled record that you'd done back in 2016,
yeah,
it seemed like there was an effort to kind of stay on course with, well, this is what Diamond Head needs to sound like. And correct me if I'm wrong, but with Coffin Train, I felt like you guys, because Belly of the Beast, again, to me, that sounded classic Diamond Head. But then it goes some other places. You know, I felt like, you know, The Sleeper, Shades of Black. I mean, I heard some Purple, some Led Zeppelin, maybe even like Soundgarden at times, and that may be the vocals, but it really seemed to go some different places. So do you feel The Coffin Train, you kind of were maybe a little more diverse with this album than you were with the 2016 self-titled one?
Yes, I think we were. I think we were a bit more bold, a bit more confident. Because the 2016 album, there'd been a long gap between that one and the previous album, which was 2007, and we had this new singer, Rasmus. So I think the general idea was not to lose any of our fans and sort of make the kind of album that a Diamond Head fan might like, but also I think Raz wanted to... In a word, ingratiate himself with the fans. The last thing he wanted to do is ruin the legacy, and have the Diamond Head fans that we've got say, I don't like the new thing, I don't like the new album, you know. So sort of it was coming from that kind of angle, you know, to try and just make the right sort of album, go back to the classic Diamond Head that people obviously liked with Lightness of the Nations and Borrowed Time, and sort of you know, make that kind of record rather than just experiment and be now and be modern, and you know, you can do that, but we thought now let's sort of tailor the record so that it sounds very Diamond Head and just see how it's received, and it was received very well, and so I think that gave us the confidence to, okay, we can branch out a little more. We can be a tiny bit more modern. You know, some of that stuff I was writing in 2016, so it's a bit more up to date. And I think you're right. You know, it does. You know, it's a bit of Soundgarden influence coming in vocally, and it just became a bit more, you know, epic, and we're not afraid to do like a few more slower songs and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad, I'm just really, really pleased that people like both the records and that Raz has been so well accepted by the fans.
I mean, Raz's voice is just insane. I mean, it's so good. Mm. He's got this, just, he hits those notes, but there's this emotional quality to it too, which I think a lot of times you get a good singer and they're pitch perfect and they can hit all the notes, but they don't have that emotional quality that sucks the listener in. And he has that. And
I agree. It's a fantastic find. I'm very lucky to have found him, and he just he really suits Diamond Head, and that we can write together and work together has been a real bonus. So it's all going well.
Absolutely. And you've kind of been on a real creative role here with two albums, you know, within the last, like, what, 3.5 years, I guess, at this point. Is this going to keep going? Are you thinking more new music in another year or so, or is two enough?
It's possible. I'm always coming up with little ideas. I've got a little home studio, so I put down ideas when they come to me. I don't know. There's no immediate plan for new material. We plan to record some stuff soon, but I don't know exactly when you know it will develop and things like that. So I'm not quite sure at the moment, but it's definitely a, you know, the door's open. We're positive about moving forward. We've already, you know, booked gigs into 2021, and the band will just continue until either we don't want to do it anymore, or just people stop coming to see the band, you know, or buying the record. So while it's all going well, and we've got a good label behind us, we've got management now with Siren Management. We're very positive, and we're looking forward to the future and see what it holds.
Awesome. And the immediate future is more gigs in 2020. I know you're going out with Saxon for a while. What else is going on for you guys in this year?
We've got some big festivals again. I mean, we did some big festivals last year. We've done a few over the past few years all across Europe. We did a couple in the US as well. We did Rocklahoma and we did Psycho Las Vegas.
Right.
But we've got... we've got Bang Your Head Festival in Germany coming up. We've got one in Barcelona called Rockfest. We've got Bloodstock again, which we played, I think, 3 years ago or something like that, 4 years ago. And we were on the Sophie Lancaster stage, where this time we're on the main stage.
Nice.
We're on the Saturday night, I believe. And so that's going to be great. We're really looking forward to that. We've also got a cruise in Finland, it's called the Wacken Full Metal Cruise.
Oh wow, that sounds
which,
fun!
Yeah, I've not done that before, so that sounds exciting. We look forward to that, and we've also been offered a date in Brazil, and the band's never been to South America before. So
Wow. We're
just about to finalise that, all being well, and That'd be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, you guys have never been to South America. That's
nope,
wow,
never
that's
been.
Crazy.
And we've had numerous requests from promoters and fans saying, you know, come over. But it's just sorting out the details and, you know, how it's all going to work. It's always the detail. The devil's in the detail.
Right on. And so 2020 sounds like it's filling up and going to be a busy year for you. It is also the 40th anniversary of the legendary album, Lightning to the Nations.
It is indeed.
Any plans to celebrate that pretty big anniversary?
Yeah, we're planning to do some shows later in the year where we will play the whole album as a 40th anniversary kind of show. And I've already been thinking about that. You know, we'll probably play some new stuff and then play the whole at the Lightning to the Nations album to finish a set. So I think that'll be good. And we're just going to actually do that. I mean, we're only in February now, so I think that'll be later in the year. We won't be doing it on a festival show because normally you get about an hour max, maybe 45 minutes. So it would be on our own gigs. But we have got some later in the year, and you've got to mark the occasion. We
Absolutely.
Did in 2010 when it was 30 years old. We did some special gigs with where we played the whole album, and it was great because, you know, it's seven good songs one after another, and the punters really went for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as a kid hearing that record. And I have to admit, you know, I heard the Metallica. I had bought the Creeping Death Signal.
I flipped
it over, heard this song, which I thought was one of their greatest songs. Then I find out it's actually a Diamond Head song. So we tracked down Diamond Head at our local record store. And it was the rawness of the Lightning to the Nations album that made it just feel so real and great and intense. And it was almost like underproduced, you know, like so many of those 80s rock records were like overproduced. Can you talk a little bit about recording that record? Do you have memories of going into the studio and laying down those tracks?
I've only got a few memories. I mean, 40 years, we were all about 19 years old when we made that record. I can remember it was done at the Old Smithy studio in Worcester, and there was a residential area where you could go and stop the night. So we stayed for exactly 1 week. We had a week to record and mix it. So the pressure was on to get it down pretty quickly. But all the songs on that album, the seven songs, we'd already played live, and we'd had some of them for a couple of years. So we were fairly well rehearsed. I do remember the drummer, Duncan, when he first heard the click track coming down his headphones, he didn't know what it was. And, you know, they're like, it's like usually a cowbell playing one, two, three, four. And he wasn't used to playing to a click track. So it completely put him off. And we had to abandon the click track. And we in the end, we didn't use a click track on any of the songs because... if he'd been used to it and been practicing maybe at home to a click track and in rehearsal, a different matter. But to suddenly pop the headphones on and a click track appears when you're about to record a take was just too much for him. So the poor chap, we had to say, no, we'll do without the click track. Thanks very much.
Which is very interesting for me to hear because, you know, as somebody who studies music, you know, I mentioned the rawness of that record.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you don't have a click track, the tempos tend to sway and move. And there's something that gives it more of a human element in some ways. And I think, you know, it's very interesting tidbit you gave us there. Cause I hear that, you know, I hear that there's something alive about that record that all these years later,
Am I Evil has a lot of tempo changes anyway. I think it's got about four or five tempo changes. So you'd have had to write quite a complicated click to move up and down over the 7 minutes, 40 seconds anyway. And I mean, people would do it now probably because you've got everything to the grid and with Pro Tools, it makes it easier if it's all perfectly in time. But then maybe it was more about the feel and the vibe and we'd just... go for it, really. And as long as you hadn't really screwed it up, you'd be happy with the take. You know, it would have an energy to it and a vibe. Because we'd all be in the room together. We'd all, you know, the drums would be set up and we'd all be looking at each other. Sean would be singing the vocal and there'd be nods going on, you know, chorus coming up and things like that. So it was pretty live. And then we'd just... redo like probably the guitar and the vocal and if there was a mistake on the bass probably maybe drop in and out something like that, but it was very, you know, like you say, raw and we didn't hang about, we got it done pretty quickly.
So at that time in rock history we saw, you know, Led Zeppelin was kind of going more commercial, bands like Kiss were, you know, embracing, you know, disco sounds and also going more commercial. Sabbath seemed to be falling apart. But punk was kind of on the rise and there was this real do-it-yourself attitude, you know, street smart punk thing going on. How aware of were you guys of that as teenagers? I mean, you had to know, hey, this punk thing's happening and we're doing rock, but you know, did that influence your sound and your attitude?
It did, definitely. Diamond Head formed in 1976 and we only wanted to be a rock band. We were kind of wanted to emulate our heroes, like you mentioned, Zeppelin, Sabbath, Purple. And then in 77, the following year, along comes punk rock in the UK. So suddenly, there's these bands on the TV. I remember watching Sex Pistols and The Jam and The Adverts and all these bands. And I really liked the punk scene. I thought the energy was amazing. And I'd had enough of a big, long... you know, almost pretentious tracks from some of these bands, you know, like Emerson, Lake and Palmer and, you know, Genesis and stuff. You know, I'm a big Genesis fan, but I think there comes a time where I can't play anything like, you know, Genesis or, you know, Yes or Pink Floyd. But I thought, I can play like the Sex Pistols, you know, I can play like the Ramones, I can do what he's doing, this guy. And that was quite inspirational. It's almost like a kick in the pants to sort of just to do it yourself vibe, go and do it, book a gig, play in your local pub up the road, you know, don't worry about becoming, you know, a virtuoso on the guitar, Richie Blackmore or Steve Howe. Just go, just play three chords and riff out. And so I didn't want to be a punk, but our music was pretty fast and raw and exciting. We learned pretty quickly that if you play fast songs and, you know, shake your hair, go for it, put a lot of work into the show, then the audience would respond. So we weren't just going to stand there and play slow, boring 20-minute songs. We wanted to, you know, power through and get whip the crowd up. So I think we took some of the punk energy and added it to our own kind of style, where we wanted to be, you know, the greatest band of all time. But but we were kind of, you know, we didn't know how to get there. But when you're only going to play a small gig in front of maybe 20, 30 people who don't know any of your songs, you know, you want a result right there and then. You want them to go away saying, that was brilliant. And so I think we borrowed some of the energy from the punk movement.
Absolutely. And a couple other questions about that actual record, Lightning to the Nations. Of course, Metallica famously went on to cover, I think, four of those seven songs, right?
Fantastic.
We mentioned Am I Evil, and I know you and Sean wrote that together. What is that song about? Were you involved with the lyrics at all, or was that just Sean? Because for many years, my mother was a witch. She was burned alive. Yeah. Like, what's the story behind that? Do you know much?
It's a great lyric. It's very... It's shocking for the time, for 1980. That's quite a lyric. I'm not really sure what it's about. I know he once mentioned something about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, but I don't see how that fits in. Another interview I saw Sean mention that he said once I'd come up with that riff, the Am I Evil riff, he had to write something suitably sort of evil, demonic, to fit with that riff. So, and he certainly did, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, as a writing team, we did work very well together. I always felt we both had our strengths. He was very good at, you know, lyrics and things. I was good at the music. And between us, you know, arrangements and ideas, we were very complimentary and... we wrote a lot of songs together and learned our craft, really, just, you know, by trial and error and just recording
right
bit
on.
By bit.
I probably should have researched this ahead of time, but I didn't. What's Sean up to nowadays? Do you hear from him at all?
No, I don't. We kind of, you know, keep our own company. I haven't seen him even for a few years. We both went to that Metallica 30th anniversary in San Francisco, and we got up and played the four covers that they've done with Metallica. So that was fantastic. But that was 2011. So I've seen him once or twice since then. We sort of don't, you know. All I know is that he just continues to write songs for himself, really. He doesn't write for anyone else. And but strangely enough, he doesn't make records, and he doesn't do any gigs. He just seems to be constantly writing, and I don't know what for. I don't know what he's waiting for or he's expecting to happen with these songs. But you know, we're not getting any younger. I think it's better to just get on with it and release stuff. You know, we've released four albums without Sean.
Yeah.
Diamond Head has. So, Sean hasn't released anything since the last thing he released, I think, was 1990, three, which was the Death and Progress album, the fourth Diamond Head album.
Okay.
So I've not heard anything he's done since then.
Right, right. And just a few more little nuggets about that album and that time frame. You know, I listened to like the song Sucking My Love, and there's this one part in that song, in the guitar solo, that sounds striking. It's a very brief part, but it sounds strikingly familiar to the breakdown in Iron Maiden's Phantom of the Opera song.
And, I like that track. That's
yeah,
a good track.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a similar...
I don't know. I can't remember, you know, copying it, really. I mean, it might just be coincidence.
Well, maybe they copied you. That was my question, because those two records came out at, like, the same time. And
yeah,
and
be.
I was wondering how much association you had with Maiden back in those days. I mean, you're both considered new wave of British heavy metal.
I remember seeing an interview with Steve Harris where he liked Diamond Head. He said he thought Diamond Head were going to be a big band. But we only really supported them the one time. We played the Lyceum in London. They headlined and we went on first. But... it would have been nice to go out on tour and do a load of dates with them, but Diamond Head, you know, as they conquered the world, we kind of fell apart in the mid '80s, and it was a real shame. But you know, Maiden's career is incredible. How they've continued and continued to make records and get bigger and bigger, and you know, take that style of music all over the world, and it's an incredible feat. I mean, they had a great manager, and they're on EMI, but even so, the work ethic in the band is obviously fantastic, and they're very dedicated to what they do.
Right on. And how about some of those other quote-unquote new wave of British heavy metal bands? Were you friends with Leopard or Saxon or Raven or any of those guys?
We bumped into a few of them from time to time. We always seem to meet up with Girls School and Angel Witch. We met Def Leppard. They came to see us at a gig in Sheffield, and we had a chat. You know, we all shook hands, and there was a mutual kind of appreciation going on. But we never got to tour with any of the bands, really. We support, you know, we'd go out with bands, supported Black Sabbath, we were lucky to do that, and we did a couple of dates.
Was that with Dio? Was that with Dio was in the band?
That, funny enough, it was Ian Gillan.
Ian, right.
It was 83, so it was the Born Again album and tour. So it was a bit of an unusual lineup with Ian Gillan and Bev Bevan on drums.
Yeah.
but it was still like a huge tour, playing to like 10,000 people.
But we
weren't overly friendly with the other New Wobham bands. I always think we'd go and see them. We'd check them out when they'd come round and play the Midlands. And we'd pretty much stand there with our arms folded, waiting to be impressed, you know, because we thought we were good. We were very confident in our abilities. And half the time we would think we're better than these guys. We were looking high, really high. We wanted to be like Led Zeppelin or something, you know, or Sabbath. We wanted to sell millions of records and conquer the world. We weren't content to just be like a good band from Birmingham or something, or as big as Nuts or something. You know, we wanted to be the greatest band of all time. We aimed very high, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. And Brian, it's been great talking with you. Before I let you go, I always have to ask my fellow guitar players about their gear, because you have such a great tone on the Coffin
Thank
Train.
You.
What are you playing out of guitar wise and amp wise?
That's mainly my 79 Les Paul, which is a really nice, you know, Gibson Les Paul standard.
Right.
Most of the guitars were done with that. I've also I've got a 96 Les Paul I use. Abs used to use he's got a John Sir and a Custom, but most of the guitars again were done with this amp I've got called a Cornford, which is a UK company. It's a Cornford MK 50, so it's a 50 watt head, and we'd just put that through. There was this orange cab at the studio, which we really liked, because I've got a couple of nice Marshall cabs, but we A-B'd them with this orange cab, and we thought the orange cab sounded better.
Okay.
We also used a diesel VH4 for when we needed loads more gain for, say, solos and things. But this Cornford, it's very impressive. I mean, it's old now. It's probably 1999, so it's 20 years old. But it's got, it almost sounds like a Marshall that's got about to explode. Right. It feels like it's on fire somehow. It's almost like the perfect Marshall, because it's got a lot of mid. It's got gain without it being fizzy or fuzzy, you know. I mean, guitarists are notoriously fussy, as you know, and we can search forever for that perfect sound. But I'm happy with this Cornford. I really like it.
So it
I'll keep expecting it to explode one day, and then it don't sound the same. But so far, so good. Touch wood and all that.
So when you're in the studio, you're putting a mic up in front of that cabinet. There's no direct Kemper stuff or anything like that. It's all, you think you can hear that on the album.
Yeah. There's no Kempers or Axe FX or anything like that. I mean, one day we may end up down that route because, you know, a lot of bands are using those amps now. And I think the choice, you know, the variety that you can dial up is incredible. But I still think there's something about a Marshall or, a good sounding valve amp where you just cranked up a bit and the volume and the way it reacts with the speaker. It's what I've been listening to. It's what we've all been listening to for, 50 odd years.
Right.
And it's hard to replicate that.
I hear you and I agree. And Brian, it's been a true honor to speak with you. Again, we wish you all the luck in the world. And
thank you.
We are looking forward to everything you have in store. And we're going to check out some more music off the Coffin Train right now on Talking Metal. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
A canvas made of skin and painted by the tears in the colors of the day. The lies will tell the truth in the suffocating lands when the children die in the womb. It's a lie for an eye.
Diamond Head, the title track, The Coffin Train, off their 2019 release. And wow, what an interview. What a great interview with Brian from Diamond Head. Thank you, Patrick from Patreon, for requesting that and lighting a fire under my ass to make it happen. Thank you for your patience, Patrick. I know you requested it a while ago, and we have been in touch with Brian's people for quite some time trying to line that up, so I'm glad it finally happened. Right now, let's get into a classic by Diamond Head.
Still. little Diamond Head here on Talking Metal. We're going to wrap things up here. A couple more songs. This is Women in Chains by Pete Way from UFO. His band Wasted, a band I once saw open for Iron Maiden back in the day. This is off of the Wasted album called Vices. And again, it features Pete Way from UFO fame. And the song, love this song, Women in Chains. Good stuff. Good stuff. Probably not PC, not these days, but man, the PC police, they drive me nuts. Women in Chains, it's all good. If, you know, listen, as long as no one's getting hurt, I think it's all good.
Makes the difference how you do it to me. Feel the warmth of my sincerity. You can take it out of your knees. Turn it over and take your disease.
Wasted here on Talking Metal. To wrap things up, we're doing a little more music by an ex-UFO member, this time Michael Schenker. This is Lost Horizons. I love this song. One of my favorite rock songs. Here we go. Michael Schenker, little MSG here on Talking Metal.